To preface this presentation, the driver behind this study was the idea that how hospitals identify physician need is a flawed model, and that physician need is going to become more and more of an issue in access, in particular, as healthcare reform and whatever model it finally comes to fruition. There's my disclosure slide. What I'm going to present today is a snippet of a larger study that was done for the Cleveland Clinic, where we looked specifically at positioning physician resource recruitment initiatives in the context of disease modeling. And I'll go through how we've done this, how this has been done historically, and why we're now in a position where our need for physicians, specifically general internal medicine, is not correlated with anticipated demand, both from the newly insured as well as existing disease burden. The background, the medical staff represents the key community asset. This is the entry point for managing healthcare disparities. Physician resource capacity is becoming constrained due to a number of variables. 5 years ago, a number of physicians decided they'd had enough and were starting to retire. The latest major recession has really impacted on everybody's 401k. A lot of them have said, well, we're going to stay around and practice for another 5 years to try to get our 401ks back in place. A lot of folks have moved to private practice or boutique practices, and those you specifically see those in the southern part of the United States, where they're guaranteed access, cash-based. It's the country club model, where internists say, I don't accept Medicare, I don't accept any third-party payers, write a check when you come in the door. Options available for successful recruitment and retention have become more and more onerous. Federal statutes, the Stark Amendment, OIG rules, the Office of Inspector General, have really tightened down on what hospitals can do in terms of recruitment strategies. And I want to stress that part of that is our own fault. For a number of years, the for-profit hospital corporations handed out sweetheart deals that were, in some cases, Medicare fraud and abuse. They were using Medicare funds to pay huge stipends to physicians to get them into practices, to make sure that all their patients came to those hospitals. The federal government said that's a no-no. Now they've gone, the pendulum has swung the other way to the point where it's almost impossible to help a physician get into practice in a community hospital setting. This has been has impacted on urban service areas dramatically. Work I've done with Cleveland Metropolitan General Hospital, which is the county hospital that is the safety net in Cleveland, has had a very difficult time filling community access satellite clinics because physicians say, I don't need the hassle. And finally, external variables, healthcare reform, chronic disease burden, which we'll talk about, and access to fellowship slots has been diminished over time. The study question, does epidemiologic modeling of disease burden augment medical staff resource models? You know, we're going to look at three specific questions. What are the limitations of the current modeling determinants? Can disease burden, especially chronic disease, serve as an indicator of need? And finally, what options exist to address disparities identified through these demand models? Let's talk about static modeling. Now, if you did a model to support the recruitment of a physician to be reviewed by the OIG, this is the approach you would take. These models were predicated on 30-year-old studies. If you go back to the days of Richard Nixon and the original managed care legislation, these were the models that were put together after the 1971 legislation was signed to validate the number of physicians needed, assuming that if we had too many surgeons, we would have too much utilization of care. To reduce the utilization of care, we just tamp down the number of surgeons available and the care will go away, right? Static models cannot control for regional disease variation. Static models are limited in terms of medical subspecialty. And when you think about these, what's happened to healthcare delivery in 30 years? When these models came out, CT scans were just introduced. MR, which was called nuclear magnetic resonance then, was still research. PET scan was research. The TIMI trials for thrombolytics was probably TIMI 1. streptokinase had just been introduced, drug-eluting stents didn't exist, bare metal stents didn't exist. We had just started to perfect balloon angioplasty. So just in that 30-year period, we've seen a sea change in the practice of medicine, which of course has subspecialized and subcompartmentalized a lot of care, but at the same time, these models were never powered to look at anything outside of cardiology as a cardiologist. So if you wanted to recruit an electrophysiologist for AFib, which is a disease of age, we couldn't come up with a model that would be valid back then. And finally, and other factors that have come up. Look at the impact of metabolic syndrome and fatty liver disease in adolescents. There are prevalence models out there now that demonstrate that children as young as 14 years old are presenting with fatty liver disease due to obesity. We didn't have that prevalence model 30 years ago. This is a fairly busy slide, but this was presented by Cooper in Annals of Internal Medicine. And what we see here are a number of different studies dating back to the early 80s that estimated the future need for physicians on this set of bars. This is actual supply, this is anticipated demand, and these are some of the models that others have projected over the last 5 years, saying this is what we really need. And what you see here is the gap. This gap is the difference between what Washington thinks we need, what we actually need, and this difference is basically underserved capacity. And you can see by 2020, that gap is going to be significantly an issue. The next set of rubrics are going to walk through how you would do a medical staff assessment in a hospital setting. This is data pulled from a community hospital that's now part of the Cleveland Clinic system of hospitals. Basically quantify service area physician supply, how many are in the market. Numerous Thomson Reuters, Thomson MedStat has probably one of the better databases, and I want to stress that none of them are any good. But this one, you for a set amount of money, gives you every physician in the market. You have to go through the fine-tooth comb and make sure they're all there, but at least this gives you a baseline. Estimating 2014 burden for select conditions. In this case, the data is correlated back to core and target service lines. The modeling is applied here, and what I mean by a disease burden modeling, a number of conditions typically seen in the hospital setting, the 80-20 Pareto curve, every one of those conditions, a prevalence model has been built around to estimate the likely 5-year out amount of disease for that condition based on peer-reviewed studies, based on expert panels, based on specialty society estimates. So this is a real-time model that changes as new studies are in place. And we also consider place or clinic location. And this is very important in inner city suburbs where we're dealing with disease burden specific to Hispanic populations, specific to, in Cleveland, we have neighborhoods that are very secular into themselves. They have specific disease burden components that have to be addressed, that if you looked at a large sample or a large spatial diagram of the community, you would never pick up that specific component. Estimating healthcare reform exposure, and I've got a slide of what this means. Finally, we correlate the market and interview findings. What did we actually find from in the field back against what the models would suggest? And we also look at changes in treatment trends. Like I said before, what factors are going to change over the next 5 years? Will drug-eluting stents, and there was a study that Califf did, I believe in 1998, that anticipated the impact of drug-eluting stents on cardiac surgery programs and cardiovascular disease programs across the country. And what his model was, it was a economic model that said the typical cardiac program at a community hospital will probably lose 30 to 40% of its volume over the next 10 years because of two things, drug-eluting stents and our ability to dose everyone with a statin. So the statin-stent complex was able to drop utilization of cardiac programs. So what's new on the agenda, and how can we correlate that likely utilization back against physician need? This is a revision of the model to look at commercial need metrics like we discussed. Finally, we correlate that back to disease burden to identify potential specific gaps between what we have and what we would likely see, recognize trends in care management which would impact on need, what's not recognized from the static model and specific subspecialties that we need that aren't in the model, what additional medical staff resources would be required. What were the core findings from one of these models? 5-year projected staffing shortfalls. The current resource complement does not match the service area cohort needs, and specifically disease burden impacts. And chronic disease progression is a big issue in almost every community. And most hospital modeling programs don't pick this up because it's expanding so quickly. Cohort aging is changing. Current delivery models, programs, and service offerings are not matched to the need. And what's most important, hospital management has no idea what this is. There's a disconnect between what management thinks they want to do and what the population's really telling us. And finally, the conclusion and really where we're going is, can science clear away some of this clutter? This is a histogram. This is Cleveland Clinic Western Region market share, or this is a populate service area market for the Western Region of Cleveland. The Cleveland Clinic hospitals, the markets anticipate to lose 10,000 folks between 2006 and 2011. And you can see the changes in cohort-specific aging, which would suggest to us that if we start focusing on this piece of the bolus of population, we should start designing programs and looking at physician recruitment specific to those specialties. We've all seen this slide from HRQ that looks at the number of chronic conditions stratified by age, and you can see that this, again, is a driver for a physician recruitment opportunity. This is a slide from Thorpe from Health Affairs in 2006 that compares 1987 chronic conditions, 5 or more for Medicare beneficiaries. At the time, about 9 million folks were affected, or about 31% of the total beneficiaries. By 2002, almost 20% had 5 or more conditions, representing half of all Medicare beneficiaries. Let's look at one specific chronic condition and how a medical staff plan can address that. Metabolic syndrome is probably one of the best examples of if you have one shot at this, use metabolic syndrome as your entry point. BMI greater than 30, type 2 diabetic. Hypertension, low HDL, and hypertriglycerides. That's the mix, and any three of those, according to Ford, makes you an inclusion candidate for metabolic syndrome. Why pick this chronic condition? Every one of these disease processes is affected by metabolic syndrome, and I'll talk about digestive disease in particular. Cardiovascular disease is self-obvious. Orthopedics, structural and repetitive motion injury due to obesity. Pulmonology, we understand that. I've got a slide on oncology. GU and GYN, significant impacts, especially associated with diabetics and BMI issues. Now, within digestive disease, looking at metabolic syndrome, I picked the esophagus, large bowel, liver, biliary system, and pancreas to look at those in more detail. And the reason for this is, if we're trying to justify the recruitment of gastroenterologists into a market, we don't want to look at irritable bowel syndrome. We want to start looking back at underlying chronic diseases that manifest themselves as digestive disease related. In the esophagus, GERD has been demonstrated by Jacobson, and the best studies were by the Cleveland Clinic GI department under Sprecher several years ago that looked at GERD-associated obesity change. GERD drives erosive esophagitis, and the purple pill masks it for 5 or 6 years, but then you come back with Barrett's esophagitis and eventually esophageal cancers. Large bowel, there's a direct correlation between colon polyp formation and obesity, and that we know where that leads. In the liver, this is a very, in the liver and the biliary tract are the two hot topics right now. Liver, NASH, and fatty liver diseases we talked about before. Driving fibrosis, biliary disease, driving gallbladders, and the key word is the three Fs, fat, fertile, and female, drive the biliary disease focus. And then finally, the pancreas and pancreatic cancers, driven in large part by carb load. This is an example of what one of the disease metrics looks like. This is a prevalence model for obesity stratified by age cohort and then liver involvement, obesity, steatosis, steatohepatitis for both the Medina target market and the Western region to give folks an idea of prevalence, and this is per thousand folks. These two slides by Callie from a New England Journal back in 03 looked at, and this is stratified by BMI intake, usually between 30 and 35, the relative risk of death of each of these cancer types, and this is in men. You can see the impact of obesity on liver CA. In women, uterine CA. This is a model that was put together for the Western region that looked at the number of internists needed to meet chronic disease demand in a market of uninsured folks. So these are only, if we manage every uninsured person, we need 94 additional internists to meet that need. This is the burden of encounter visits to drive the 94, and this is using data that Schoen put together in 2008 of stratified age-related uninsured folks. The next slide is an application of a modeling program for Lakewood Hospital where we looked at correlating specific intake criteria by age cohort to identify where we would need additional physician staffing. This is an extremely busy slide that tests your skill set at 8:30 in the morning, but what this does is looks at the level of program integration by age cohort and where the intake point is. COPD, orthopedic surgery, anorectal physiology, metabolic syndrome falls across all age cohorts. Heart failure is usually it starts at 60, community-acquired pneumonia, screening colonoscopy, but you can see these are all drivers of physician need. And if we're focusing on the 70-year-old piece, you can see how medical orthopedics, AAA screenings, memory loss, swallowing disorders all start to manifest at that time. This slide represents a chronic disease model developed for an uninsured population. Basically, we took the frequent flyers out of the emergency room and put them in a new model, and this is what that model looked like. So we could develop specific physician supply data or need around a target population of folks. We knew who they were, we knew what their utilization rates were, we knew what chronic conditions they had. This was a model that was put in place to recruit new internists to it. And most importantly, this is a model that stands on its own with various corporate or various governmental agencies who want to look at how do we address disparate populations. Conclusion, static demand models were designed to constrict access, and they certainly aren't powered for today's medical care delivery. Epidemiologic prevalence models offer a window into community-level disease and result in need. Solutions can be directed to target audiences with target programming. And finally, the big issue here is public health collaboration with healthcare delivery systems is one opportunity for the two groups to work together. And with healthcare reform moving in the way it's moving, this is a prime opportunity for us on the public health side to become larger spokesmen in acute care delivery. Thank you.